When was the last time you took the time to look at the stars? We've all done this, hopefully, at least a few times in our lives, when you look up and it's a clear night and you can see farther than your mind can even comprehend into space, into the universe, the stars in the sky. And if you haven't done it lately, even my mentioning it may make you want to do it and plan to or hope or wish that you could. There's nothing like looking up at the starlit sky, so vast and beautiful, so wonderful, so open. I remember as a child, I grew up in more rural Ohio, on summer nights going into our backyard, I would go and I would lay in the grass with the feeling of the grass on the back of my neck and just look up at the stars. And it was amazing. It was wonderful. It was beautiful. Now, if you like to study these things, we know that astronomers tell us that stars are basically exploding balls of gas. Mostly hydrogen and helium, we're told their life cycle spans billions of years and they're farther away than we could ever imagine. Even the sun that warms us and brings life is a star. And of course, that idea that ancient peoples thousands of years ago or more looked at the same stars that we do, as they looked into the night sky. They charted them, looked to the constellations, and used them to understand the seasons and the cycles of the earth, navigating the oceans. They looked at the same stars. Stars in our universe are amazing. They bring a sense of wonder when you look at them, no matter if you understand them or not. And so again, when was the last time that you were able to just look up at the sky and to see the wonder of our universe? Today's gospel story is a famous one, and it has to do with a star. What's amazing is that it's so important, this story, that it actually has its own holiday in the church, its own day on the calendar. It's called Epiphany. It doesn't always fall on a Sunday. It's January 6th, and that moves. But today, on this second day of Christmas, we're celebrating Epiphany also, which is tomorrow, January 6th. Epiphany has been used in the calendar often as a time to move from the Christmas season. My mom was telling me the other day that she grew up Lutheran, and it was very important on the eve of Epiphany, which would be tonight, that you took down all your Christmas decorations, you put them away. That was what you were supposed to do, at least in the house she grew up in. Epiphany means revealing. It points to light, and during this Epiphany season, which leads us to Lent, we'll be following these stories of Jesus that we find in the scriptures. It tells about who he was and what he taught, especially the beginning of his ministry, and who his followers were and what they believed about him and taught. But today we start with the story of the Magi from the East who came to meet the child Jesus. This story is only in the Gospel of Matthew, and so based off Matthew's telling of the story, the idea was not that the Magi came to visit the baby Jesus with their gifts in the manger or when he was in the stable, but probably not until he was sometime around 2 years old. Now, you may know people who feel very strongly about this and will never put the three Magi out in their manger scene because they think it's wrong. And it technically is. I don't have a huge problem with it, though I did say we weren't going to put them out this year up front because we just didn't have enough room. I noticed a church down the street had put on their nativity scene outside, they had put the Magi about maybe 50 feet away on their way to the manger. I'm not a purist with all this. If you put your Magi in your manger scene, it's okay. It's not a big deal. We're celebrating the same thing. But what's important to know is that the idea was that Jesus wouldn't have been a baby when these Magi showed up on the scene. And what matters is why this story even exists. Now, believe it or not, it's a very political story. Just what you wanted to hear in church today, more politics. In all seriousness, the first readers would have known this story when they read it was about politics, and they knew that it was, in a way, saying something that would be risky at the time. Matthew writes, in the time, King Herod After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, King Herod was a king who was propped up by the Roman government in Judea to rule. He was still under the jurisdiction of Caesar. He was called a king, but in Rome, only someone who was given the title of king by the Roman government could be called a king. So when the wise men came from the east and they asked, "Where is this child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed this star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." There was a statement being made. Now, who were these wise men? Well, they were probably supposed to be recognized as court priests who practiced magic and astrology from an area known as Parthia. Ancient Parthia is today modern-day Iran, which maybe you can recognize the irony in that, in what's happening in our world right now, in our country and military and politics. These men would have been advisors who used astrology, magic, religion, all kinds of different ways of seeing things, ways of doing things to advise their leaders in that time. Now this story, just as back then, is meant to amaze us. You may have heard this before. We don't know how many magi there were. It wasn't until medieval times that it became said that there were three because of the three gifts, but we don't know. It could have been two, it could have been 20. We don't know for sure. But when they came, we know that Herod didn't like it because it was a threat to him politically, according to the story. And so, of course, he called together all of his advisors and inquired them where the Messiah was to be born, and they told him in Bethlehem of Judea. Now, I'm not an astronomer, and I don't really know a whole lot about our universe and how those things work. I know that around this time of year and other times, there have been specials on channels like the History Channel or Discovery Channel that try to say, well, they must have been seeing this star, or it must have been that star, and it happened to be bright in this time. But I don't know anything about the validity of all of that. Of course, it's fun to think about. But the political part of this story is that Herod wanted to know where this Messiah was so he could have him killed, but the Magi didn't want to give in to that, so they took another way home. The even more dangerous political side of the story was that any writing at the time in the Roman Empire that called someone a king who wasn't named a king by the Roman government could get you in trouble. So calling Jesus a king was risky. But Matthew and the early Christians knew that. They still wrote it anyway. But what amazes me about this story is that there are so many implications for what it means to be people of faith, people of spirituality. The idea that these magi, coming from a faraway place, making a long journey because of a star, following a star to give gifts of gold, expensive, of course, frankincense and myrrh, which were about smells and ointments. It was kind of amazing if you really think about the whole story. It's all supposed to bring us a little wonder, a little amazement, if you can imagine this scene of these people who are from a different culture, a different religion, a different outlook, even from Jesus and his parents and most Jews at the time, coming and worshiping him, giving him expensive gifts. Now, when I was a kid, the church I grew up in always had, on the Sunday that the children's Christmas program happened, three dads, usually, or three men of the congregation, dress up in these elaborate magi costumes. And at the end of the program, after the kids had done their whole singing and their Christmas play and pageant, these three magi would come, and if you could see these outfits that they would wear. They were filled with bright colors and gold and silver, and they were just the most wild things you had ever seen. They had hats that went very high. And I remember as a kid, as they would walk in, even every year, knowing that it would happen, just being in awe as these three people came in. And they were so well costumed, and they had on fake beards and all this stuff that you didn't even know who they were. In fact, sometimes my dad was one of them, and I didn't even know it was him. And I remember sitting there looking at them and just feeling this sense of awe and amazement about it, just because of what they wore and that they were different. But I also probably didn't mention that they'd hand out boxes of candy to the kids, too, so that's probably why I remember it as well. Now, I don't know all the details. We don't know much about all the details of this story, historically or otherwise, but I'm still amazed by what the story suggests and what Matthew's purpose was in writing it. That these wise men, that these magi who had important positions, jobs in the court in their culture, who had the ability to give expensive gifts, who saw a star with amazement and wonder, without knowing where it would lead them or what would be next, they went on a journey to find out what it was all about, a journey to find the Messiah. They didn't know who he would be or what he would look like or if they'd ever find him. They didn't know if the journey would last their whole lives and they would die on the journey. They didn't know if it would be short and they'd be back within months to tell what they had found. They didn't know. There was a sense of mystery to it and awe that they just went out on hope and amazement. The stars were telling the Magi, in their opinion, that something new, something beautiful, something life-changing was happening. They saw in the stars a new hope, a new journey, a life-changing way of seeing the world. This is what the season of Epiphany is all about. We've been through Advent, we've been through the celebration of Christmas, and hopefully it was filled with joy and happiness for you, but now we're on to Epiphany, where all these lights may come down, but we continue to light the Christ candle to remind us that the light of Christ continually shines, and that even with the wreaths and the decorations no longer here, and we stop telling the story of the shepherds and the angels, and all those things, we still have to hold on to that wonder and amazement somehow. We have to realize that our spirituality, a part of our faith, our path of what it means to be connected to God and the divine, that it still is beautiful, that it still is amazing, that there's still an awe about it, where we can pause and look to the stars. I mean, let's be honest, look around us, watch the news. The world is burning, literally. There is war, there are rumors of war, there is climate change, war and politics, hatred and racism, anger and uncertainty. It's all here and it's swirling around us like a storm. And yes, we all have our opinions and our ideals and our votes and our causes, but there's this moment, there's a time, especially in the season of Epiphany, where we're called to make sure that we still find wonder and amazement and mystery and hope in this journey we call faith and life. This doesn't mean that we should forget what's happening around us. There were politics and kings and wars in the time of this story as well. But Matthew makes sure that we know that in this story there's the opportunity to recapture this wonder and amazement. This story isn't anti-stars, it's not anti-journey, it's not anti-other religions, it's pro all these things. It's pro everyone, it's pro the journey, it's about the mystery and not knowing what's next and hoping for something good, and it's beautiful and it's worth waiting for and maybe even worth traveling to an unknown place for. So it's my hope and prayer for you this Epiphany season that you can find time and space in your life to experience the love of God, the divine within, the journey of your spirituality and your life. I hope you can find time to see the stars. Amen.